This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Elon Musk sells off billions more in Tesla stock. Plus, a leading credit score company plans to ignore medical debts, and investors race to buy up vacant land near America's fastest-growing cities.
So Tito Beveridge bought about a Manhattan size worth of land around Austin. Bill Gates owns about twice as much close to Phoenix. The scale of land that these people are buying is just out of this world.
It's Wednesday, August 9th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A candidate backed by former U.S. President Donald Trump has won Wisconsin's primary for governor. Businessman Tim Michaels defeated former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish last night, setting up Michaels to take on Democratic Governor Tony Evers in November in what is expected to be one of the nation's most hotly contested races. Michaels' win is Trump's latest high-profile victory for a candidate that he'd endorsed and underscores his ability to elevate those who bolstered his false claim of widespread election fraud in the 2020 presidential election. If elected governor, Michaels has left open the possibility that he would try to decertify President Joe Biden's win in the state. Meanwhile, this week's FBI raid on Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida is already showing signs of roiling the midterms as well as the 2024 presidential race. People close to Trump said the search could further motivate him to announce a run for president in 2024 before the midterm elections. Turning to China now, the country's headline consumer inflation rate has surged to its fastest pace in 2 years. According to China's National Bureau of Statistics, consumer prices jumped 2.7% in July from a year earlier, up from a 2.5% gain in June. However, the headline inflation rate missed economists' expectations of a 2.9% rise. Economists say that's a sign of weaker domestic demand and that Beijing's efforts to stimulate consumption have fallen flat amid continued COVID-19 restrictions. In other inflation news, U.S. consumer price data for July is due out later today. Elon Musk has sold nearly $7 billion of Tesla stock in recent days, according to new regulatory disclosures. In a tweet on Tuesday, the billionaire suggested the stock sales were aimed at avoiding a fire sale of Tesla stock if he's forced to buy social media company Twitter. Neither Tesla nor Musk responded to a request for comment. And crypto exchange Coinbase has posted a steep second quarter loss of $1.1 billion compared to a profit of $1.6 billion a year ago. Journal reporter Julie Steinberg says that Coinbase's second consecutive quarterly loss was driven by the crypto market's spring meltdown.
Coinbase is the largest U.S.-based crypto exchange and one of the top three in the world by trading volume. And it's one of the few publicly traded companies in the sector, so its earnings provide insight into an otherwise opaque market. The second quarter was arguably the worst three-month period in the short history of cryptocurrencies.
We are exclusively reporting that major U.S. credit score provider VantageScore has said that come October, it will stop factoring all medical debts that are in collections into the latest versions of its scores. Hospitals and other medical providers send unpaid bills to collection companies, which then report the accounts to credit reporting firms such as VantageScore. That information often lowers people's credit scores, which makes it harder for them to get approved for credit or to get loans on affordable terms. Journal reporter Anna Maria Andriotis reports on consumer credit for us, and she's here now with the latest. Hi, Anna Maria.
Great to be speaking with you.
How big of a deal is this? What kind of effect could this announcement have on borrowers?
Well, the scoring change is expected to affect millions of people who currently have medical debts that are in collections on their credit reports. The change would result in people's credit scores increasing by up to 20 points. That may not sound like a lot, but it can make a pretty big difference in whether somebody gets approved or not, depending on lenders' credit score cutoffs during the underwriting process. And it could also result in people getting better interest rates than they would currently be offered. Medical debt on credit reports affects people in a variety of ways. And this has been a controversial topic, I'd say, within the consumer lending sector in the U.S. for a really long time. On the one hand, yes, it is a negative item that shows that somebody has not paid an obligation of theirs. On the other hand, it is a different type of negative item than a credit card or an auto loan or a mortgage that somebody fell behind on payments on. So a change like this, following on what the major credit reporting firms in the U.S. announced earlier this year, can have significant impacts on people, essentially resulting in things like lower interest rates on loans and cards that they're approved for, as well as lessening the chances of being rejected, among other benefits.
And could there be a benefit here for lenders as well? I don't know, maybe opening up a new cohort of borrowers for them?
Well, there could be a positive outcome here for lenders. You know, oftentimes lenders have credit score cutoffs, especially when you get into decisions that need to be made very quickly, like credit card approval decisions being one example. So if there's a lift, even one that's not so big in the credit scores of millions of people, that could result in an increase in loan volume.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Anna Maria Andriotis, who reports on consumer credit for us. Anna Maria, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll head to the U.S. Sun Belt, where the pace of vacant land purchases is red hot. We'll look at who's behind that trend after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
A lot of land is currently trading hands around some of America's fastest-growing cities. And we're not talking about purchases of single-family homes or apartment blocks or even commercial warehouses like we've discussed on past shows, but plain old vacant land and thousands upon thousands of acres of it. The Journal's Conrad Putzier covers commercial real estate for us, and he's here to explain why investors are leading this current land rush and how it could potentially transform some of America's cities. Hi, Conrad.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Paint a picture for us, if you could, of these land buys that are occurring that you've been learning about. Who is behind them and how much land are we talking about here?
So it's a number of investors that are really descending on the Sun Belt here and buying up land around these hot markets like Austin, Phoenix, Miami. Some of them are just normal investment firms, right? These are companies that pool money from investors, sometimes from pension funds or institutions, sometimes from doctors, lawyers, software engineers. They pool money, they buy land as an investment. But what we're also seeing increasingly is just rich people who view this as a great investment. So one of the people we've identified as a huge land buyer in the Austin area is a guy called Tito Beverage. He's famous for launching the company Tito's Handmade Vodka. And he's putting a lot of money into Sunbelt land. Another investor we've come across is a Uruguayan fashion mogul who's basically buying up vacant sites in Miami. So Tito Beverage bought about a Manhattan size worth of land around Austin. Bill Gates owns about twice as much close to Phoenix. So it's sort of a mix of investors, but increasingly high net worth individuals see land as a really appealing investment.
So what is the investment case for these purchases now?
So there's this famous saying, right, which has been attributed to a bunch of people, including Mark Twain, which says, buy land, they're not making it anymore. So it's really supply and demand, right? There is a limited amount of land in the United States, and particularly there's a limited amount of land close to big growing cities where you can build housing. So there's this scarcity. At the same time, you have this huge increase in demand with all these people moving to Austin, Phoenix, Miami, which has really been going on for years. and is now getting even more of a phenomenon during the pandemic. So this combination of increasing demand and limited supply is really a fantastic investment thesis for anyone who has a lot of money and is looking to spend it. And that's really what's driving it. And what you've also seen really is that this is part of this broader phenomenon of investors seeking risk in recent years. Now, not so much anymore because of rising interest rates, but in recent years, you've seen more and more investors go into risky asset types. And this is really part of it because land is a risky investment. Profits can go up like crazy. There's one guy, Sebastian Drapac, who runs this land investment firm, Drapac Capital Partners, and he told me he'd like quadruple his money in as little as 4 years on some of these deals. At the same time, of course, land values can go down a lot as well. So yeah, it's really for people who have a certain tolerance for risk and have a lot of money to spend, it's a great investment.
So what does this race to acquire all this land mean for the communities where these purchases are occurring? Are we about to see, I don't know, a huge development push?
It really depends on which investors we're talking about, because there's really broadly two types of land investors that we're seeing. One are these sort of land developers who buy a bunch of land, then they work to rezone these properties, say from a farm to residential use so you can build housing. They add roads, they add plumbing, they add infrastructure, and then they sell it to housing developers or home builders. And those investors actually play a great role in the housing market. They're really needed because they're sort of a crucial intermediary between turning like huge vacant ranch into a bunch of homes. And where these investors are buying land, you're definitely likely going to see more housing development. But the second type of investor that we're seeing are these speculators that basically buy land, do nothing with it, keep it for years or even decades, and wait for values to rise. And a perfect example of that type of investor is a guy I mentioned earlier, Enrique Manhard. He is a man who made a fortune in Uruguay with fashion stores and has been putting a lot of his money into land in Miami. And he isn't a land developer at all. What he basically does, according to the brokers that have worked with him, is just buy land, keep it vacant for years, and basically just wait for the value to rise. And that can actually be an issue for cities, this type of investment, because it might actually make it harder in some cases for developers to find land to build on.
How does that work, though? If you're not going to develop this land and just sit on it, how is the tax bill on it alone not enough to force you to make developments?
So this is really a quirk in the U.S. property tax system that enables this whole type of investment. Because in almost all states and cities, taxes on vacant land are way lower than for buildings. And housing advocates have criticized this for years, but basically if you have a vacant lot and you could hypothetically build a 30-story apartment building on it, your tax bill on the vacant lot is still going to be really low. It's just going to be treated as vacant land. So you can hold this, keep it vacant for ages, and the tax bill is going to be really low. In the suburbs and exurbs, it's even crazier because what you can do, there's all these tax breaks for farmers and ranchers. One perfect example of how the tax code really benefits these owners of vacant land is Tito Beveridge, who I've talked about before, the vodka mogul. He has these huge land holdings around Austin that appraisers valued at $220 million. And yet, at the same time, because much of it is ranch land, the taxable value, according to local authorities, is just $6 million, which basically means the taxes that you pay are just a fraction of what they otherwise would be. And so for an investor like that, there's really very little cost involved in keeping your land vacant because taxes are low. So you can afford to keep it vacant for years or even decades and just wait for values to rise.
Conrad Putzier is the Journal's commercial real estate reporter based out of New York. Conrad, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, there is a crisis in the penthouse of society. The labor shortages that have affected many businesses lately are making one concern of the ultra-rich all that more pressing. Finding a skillful executive assistant tasked with everything from mixing martinis to handling finances. WSJ On the Clock columnist Callum Borscher says that for those roles, even high salaries don't guarantee retention.
You might think that if you're pulling down $200,000 or even $300,000 or $400,000 a year, you'd put up with just about anything, but that's not necessarily the case. I'm told by some of the staffing specialists who place people in these really demanding executive assistant and chief of staff roles that sometimes people burn out and quit within just a few days because they maybe weren't expecting just the level of grueling schedule. Maybe it's being called upon to travel on a moment's notice, leaving behind your own family. It can also involve just sort of a feeling of loneliness. And even though you're sort of in proximity to this elite class of people, you're not really in the circle. You're just sort of on the periphery.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We will be back tonight with a news show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.